Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Today, I'm joined by two complete newcomers to the show. It's very exciting. This will probably be, so this is the first episode you're doing. It'll probably be the last, if all goes according to my plan.
Great.
That sounds terrible.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I really don't. I have no idea. But we've got Mr. Mark Spurlock sitting across from me.
Hello.
And then Paige Hamilton sitting diagonally from me. And Paige and I have known each other since we were childs.
Yeah.
We were small childs.
Small
innocent children before, you know, the ravages of life took hold and ruined everything.
Yeah. It's completely different now.
It's completely different.
Everything's changed.
I know. So that's, and on that note, we're going to talk about Following, Christopher Nolan's first movie. So we've been going a little nuts over Nolan at the Nerd Party. If you follow us, and you should at Join Nerd Party, or if you are on the nerdparty.com, go check out all the other shows. Mostly check out my show and all the other episodes, but the other guys are pretty good too. The other guys and gals. So make sure you get everybody in there. But we've been going a little Nolan crazy. We've been talking about Dunkirk a lot. That just came out last weekend. Mm-hmm. I loved it. Have you two gotten to see Dunkirk yet?
Not yet.
Okay, episode's over.
We've agreed to go and see it at some point in the near future.
Because I thought this was supposed to be kind of like a precursor to that. I mean, not like a prequel, but like we're doing this.
Following is a prequel.
Talking about Nolan because we're about to go like watch another group. Like,
well, I don't want to spoil Following for you, but he does time travel back to World War II at the end of this movie, and it all comes full circle. Nolan is very cerebral at that.
He would do that.
Yeah.
So but I thought it would be appropriate since you two have not seen Following. This is his first movie, and then you can go see his most recent movie. I almost said his last movie, but that would sound terrible.
Don't jinx it.
But so as far as how you two feel about Nolan, so we'll start with you, Mark. I'm not going to be polite and say ladies first. I'm just going to go straight for Mark because he's sitting across from me.
That makes sense.
That's fair. I'm not sure. you should turn off your phone.
I should probably turn that off.
Siri insists getting in on this conversation.
Pretty soon there will be no name that you can say out loud in your own house without something activating.
That's what I'm hoping we get to. Yeah. That's Nolan's next movie. So Mark, as far as your opinions on Christopher Nolan, are you a fan of his films? What is your level of obsession with this guy?
I wouldn't call it obsession. I'm pro Nolan. When Christopher Nolan movies come out, I am interested in them and I expect them to be good. So that is where I'm coming from. All the Batman movies, maybe not the last one, pretty great. Prestige, pretty great. Inception, pretty great. Good stuff.
Awesome.
Good Nolan.
And there you go. Paige?
Yeah. Similar. I think what I just can, like, still confuses me is, like, how few credits he has. Like, he's just generally always done good things.
Right. I thought you were going to say what generally confuses me is his movies. They tend to be kind of confusing.
No, I like them. I don't think I've ever been too perplexed by them. I think what's always just been impressive is, like, I just go look up all his projects and it's like, yeah, that's good. That's good.
He's got a consistent track record.
And he's like young. Like,
he is. He's
the level of, you know, acclaim that he's reached.
Yeah.
It's just, I think that's kind of why he stands out right now and why he's so popular is that consistency.
It is. And he's, you know, as far as you compare him to, he's like one of the most popular filmmakers now. Mm-hmm. And he's like a household name now, like Spielberg and stuff.
Right,
but the difference is, where Spielberg, and this is not a knock against Spielberg, because I would probably call him my favorite filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Spielberg's pretty straightforward and makes movies that are designed to appeal to the masses, whereas Nolan kind of challenges you a little bit. And he's kind of like, you have to work with me, and you're not going to fully understand this, but I need you to kind of meet me halfway here.
But it ends up appealing to the masses regardless, right? Like, almost all of his movies are crazily successful.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to respect him for that.
So he's just confusing enough that audiences still love him.
Yeah.
But not too confusing to get to the point where it's like David Lynch or something like that.
I just feel like he's like new money in directors. He's like
exactly. So just to give you a brief history on this movie. Following, as I said, it's his first feature-length movie. Mm-hmm. This is pretty cool. This is inspiring to any aspiring filmmakers out there. He shot this over the course of like a year. And just basically, he shot it for $6,000 total.
Yeah,
and this is like, he just got his friends together and was like, let's just do this on weekends because they all had like day jobs and stuff.
So he didn't pay anyone.
I don't know. I think Nolan, at this point in his career, might owe some people money. He might want to... might want to think about that.
That's fair.
But yeah, so they just made it on weekends, and it wasn't like a huge success by any means, but it's kind of awesome in that regard. It's like super short, 70 minutes. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a while. I think last time I saw it might have been in college, but I remember not necessarily loving it, but thinking like, this is so, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of staples of Nolan, like everything happens out of sequence. So it's like, he plays with time a lot. There are things that are, it's very kind of low-key and dark. Not low-key like Thor's brother, but like low-key.
Right.
It's pretty cool. And there's also, keep your eyes peeled for a little foreshadowing. I'm probably going to like shout at it. And like, it's not like one of those things where it's like, it's a little Easter egg. I will probably shout at the TV and be like, did you see it? But there's a little teaser in there of a future film that he would end up directing.
Oh. And
I wonder if you two will be able to pick up on it. Like I said, you probably will, because I will probably be shouting.
I'll pick it up first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I might get it. I'm going to call it out.
It's all right. We're just going to loop back in time to this, and then I'll get it the second time around.
We'll see.
This episode is going to be exactly like an Nolan film. We should just start the episode with the after part.
When you edit it.
And we'll go to the before part, and we'll cut it all together in a weird way, and people will be really mathled. But yeah, so it's very cool, very low budget, very interesting. Again, I don't know if I'd call it great, but it's at the very least really impressive, considering how the resources he had. But how do you two feel? What is your level of excitement? And you can be as honest as you want. Like, are you interested in seeing this? Was it on your radar at all? Or how do you feel?
Oh, no. I didn't know about it until...
until now.
You asked, like, what... If there was something of his, like, we hadn't seen...
Right.
And it was literally like the only thing we hadn't seen.
We kind of got desperate.
Yeah. I assumed that he had made movies prior to The Prestige, but I would not have been able to name them or anything. So, yeah, definitely.
Not even Batman Begins?
Is that one before The Prestige?
That's before The Prestige.
I don't really know the chronology. No, wait. In Nolan terms.
Is The Prestige really before or after Batman Begins? Or is Batman Begins... after The Prestige, or is
we're still in The Prestige right now?
We are in a dream.
Now I'm starting to feel bad for Christopher Nolan, in case like he actually just lives in this constant like state of fear about like he never knows when or where, like when he is.
Right,
in time.
He's so trapped in his own mind. He doesn't.
I'm starting to feel bad.
He doesn't know how his life
is constantly suffering, and we're just.
Christopher Nolan is a regular listener of Missing Frames, and I know I'm sure he appreciates us doing this for him and expressing our concern. And Mr. Nolan, we hope you get better soon. We hope you're able to perceive time and reality in a way that is normal. And
you can answer our letters.
All our letters, please.
All the funds we raise from this podcast.
This podcast to send you a letter.
The Christopher Nolan Foundation for Christopher Nolan.
We raised a lot of funds to send you a single letter. It's a really impressive letter. I'm sure you got it. Please write us back at P.O. Box missingframes.com.
That's how P.O. boxes work.
That's how P.O. boxes work. It's the future. We're in the 21st century. We're in Nolan's world now. You don't know what's going to happen next. But okay, so moderately, at least interested in seeing this movie.
Yeah, the plot, it sounds interesting. Like the log line looks good.
Okay.
I like it.
There you go. All right. Well, let's break and we'll watch it. And then we'll be back. So stay tuned, people.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right. And we're back. We just watched Following. How followed do you feel right now?
I feel more following than followed.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was mostly following the movie.
You were mostly following the movie, but not necessarily following...
Following closely behind it, not quite caught up with it, but like within striking distance the entire sure. time.
I think that's the way.
But not ahead of it.
No.
No, I wasn't ahead of it for sure. In fact, there was parts of it where I was very behind it. Like, it really wasn't, I don't know. So the first time we saw the haircut version of the protagonist, I was right. like, is that the same guy? And then I was like, no, why would you even think that? He looks totally different. So like I got it, and then I discarded it, and then later I was like, oh no, that's the guy.
It is the guy.
Yeah, aww. That's the guy. What did you catch that the first time?
Yeah.
Okay, and you kept with it? Because I just talked myself out of it immediately.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were like, it's not him. Did you believe it wasn't him the entire movie? I want to hope that's what happened. And you were just completely confused. You're like, when are these two guys going to meet each other?
No, it was
like
two movies when we watched one.
At first, I assumed they were the same person, but I couldn't remember why I assumed that. And then it dropped to like a 15% chance to the same person, but I don't know why I think that. And it was like they're definitely the same person. I'm making this more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, I think with all the discussion we had going into it of how Nolan jumps time, that kind of clued me
in. You should have picked up on it, Mark, is what Paige is saying.
Well, that's what I did. I just didn't trust it.
You never believe. Don't believe anything you see. So how do we feel about that? I mean, the first thing that strikes me is it's, again, kind of what I was saying before. It's a very, like, confident debut. Like, it's very like Nolan stylistically, a lot of stuff that continues to show up in his movies today is there. So it's like, this is unmistakably a Nolan movie. It's a little clunky as far as the whole plot of the movie is basically this guy follows people to get ideas for stories and then happens to follow somebody who turns out to have planned this grand scheme to mm-hmm. frame this guy for a murder, essentially, right. or that turns out to not be a murder. He basically just framed this guy so he could get away with money and kill a girl. I feel like I've been inceptioned.
That actually makes me feel better, because at the end of the movie I was kind of like, so what kicked all this off? Well, like, ultimately, from the other guy's point of view, it seemed like he got followed, and just like in the moment he put together, hey, here's a genius plot that will last several weeks and work out perfectly where I can make this guy do stuff for me.
No, I thought it was
go on.
Kind of now I'm second guessing what I thought, because I thought it was kind of clearly spelled out.
Yeah, no, I thought it was, and then they went back on it. So I'm not. What do you think?
Needed somebody to frame
for
the old lady
who didn't exist.
Yeah, there was no old lady.
When was that?
That's what the cops
at the very end. The cops like, there was no old lady. So I'm confused what the whole thing was about. What was the motivation? Was it just to? It was like it was a dream within a dream within a dream. They basically at the end it was like, okay, so we're gonna frame everything on this guy for the murder of a woman who doesn't exist, but really we're gonna frame him for the murder of.
So well, I feel like either way, whether there was an old lady or not, he was working for. You know, boss,
the
club owner.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful club owner.
Ended up needing to frame somebody for all this stuff. So that club, though, that he robbed at the end was his, it was owned by the big guy, right?
Yeah.
So maybe like insurance. So he basically has to plot himself being robbed.
Here's what I think it is. So they wanted to kill the woman because she saw the person being murdered. So they came up with this elaborate plan to basically put it on Bill, I think is the guy's name.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. So like that alone would be enough to.
So when the first guy got murdered in the flashback, was that the culmination of some equally elaborate plan that we just didn't see the rest of? Because it kind of seemed like they had the we can just murder people thing down.
Yeah. That was her. She witnessed that murder.
Right.
And that's why they had to get rid of her.
Right.
And then the plan was to put it all on Bill. This is amazing, by the way. It's been 6 minutes and we're still trying to figure out the plot of this movie.
Yeah. I think that's right. It's just why did they need an elaborate scheme to murder her, whereas they murdered this other guy just... You know,
willy nilly.
Yeah, I know. That's all. And also, the scheme is so elaborate. There's no chance it would work out like in real life, right? You would think of that scheme. You're like, wow, that's really brilliant, and only works in movies. I will go do something else now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So if there wasn't an old lady, then why were the cops talking to Cobb in the first place?
Because he went to So he went to them to be like, oh, yeah, that's actually...
No, they weren't talking to Cobb, right? They said they'd never heard of Cobb.
No. Oh,
they were talking to Bill. Bill goes to the cops, and he basically is like, I'm going to confess everything. And then the cop, for some reason, like plays along, and then at the very end, because it's a movie, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, this guy never existed, and Cobb doesn't live there, and there never was an old lady. And it's like, why couldn't you just have told me that at the beginning? Because then you wouldn't have a movie.
Yeah, that was one twist too many for me. Like, you really could have stopped the movie before all that was revealed, and it would have been a thing that made sense.
Yeah.
And I guess now it's the thing you get to talk about for 40 minutes instead, which maybe it's what he's going for.
What do you think? Paige, I see you, like, you're trying to... honestly...
Well, Cobb had said he did talk to the cops, and he told them all this stuff, so is that not true?
He said that to the blonde, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess he was lying. Yeah. I'm also confused.
Because
I feel like... No, I feel like that's true. I think he went to the cops first, or they talked to him, because he was spotted... Or maybe he just went to the cops and told them about,
lied to her about the whole thing. Maybe he was lying to her in the first place. Like, he fed her that story so she would feed it to him. But then really, it's all an elaborate scheme to get her murdered.
Yeah, it's possible. But also, like, the cops said they had gone and checked that place. So,
yeah.
Well, because
has Bill already talked to the cops once before? And this is the second time around?
So here's the next question. Does Nolan get so obsessed? Does Christopher Nolan get so obsessed with his like plots within plot? Because this is in The Dark Knight. This happens like in a lot of his movies. Like the Joker, in order for the Joker's plan to succeed, everything has to happen in a very specific way. Like,
right.
You know, the Joker goes on this elaborate chase where he's trying to kill Harvey Dent, but really he doesn't want to kill Harvey Dent. He wants to get captured so that he can, you know, escape. And the guy with the cell phone in his stomach will blow up.
Yeah.
So Nolan's plots, so clearly this is with him from the beginning. Like needlessly complicated plots that when you start to look at them, don't make much sense.
Well, with the Joker, I feel like it's a little easier to just like accept that he's, you know, on the one hand insane, on the other hand a genius. And you're like, so yeah, he could put these ridiculous, you know, Xanatos-y plots together. And because he's the Joker, we'll let it say that would happen. I don't know who Cobb is. I guess maybe he's the Joker falls in the acid.
Well, we did realize, you pointed out, because I didn't even think about it, but Cobb is Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Inception.
I don't know if I would have noticed that unless you had told me to look for the Batman thing. But exactly. Yeah.
The thing I was talking about was the Batman sticker. But then you actually won everything. Now, Paige, you technically laughed first when you saw the Batman sticker, so you recognized it.
That's fair.
But he kind of preemptively... And in a completely like outside of what I was thinking, you both won, really, because you pointed out Cobb and then you saw Batman.
Nice.
There you go. High five.
Yeah.
But so complicated movie. Well made. I mean, it doesn't it's kind of crazy to think that this was done for like such a small amount of money. I don't know. I mean,
it's pretty simple. I mean,
those apartments could have been like their apartments. Like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, let's film this in my townhouse. Let's get
small cast.
I don't like this carpet, so we can kill a person on it. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, four actors or whatever with speaking parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't too technically complex. Like, you know, it wasn't like people talk about Nolan's movies and it's like, oh my God, they're visual masterpieces. And this was very straightforward, like nitty gritty, nothing like really striking as far as like, oh my God, that shot's amazing or anything like that. It's just like really like down and gritty, like straightforward filmmaking, like to tell the story. And he wrote the script, he directed it, he shot it. So he did like the camera operation and everything. So, I mean, it's like guerrilla filmmaking at its finest.
Well, I think what's cool about that and something I've started appreciating more is just, you know, just a good story. You know, a good story is going to make the whole thing so that, like, you don't need all the production value and anything fancy. Like, I realized, like, about, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through, I was like, this would be just as interesting just watching it straightforward through time.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I could do without a few of these, like, time jumps.
Yeah, it started to feel a little arbitrary.
Like, it would be, this is a really interesting story. It would be just as good just watching it, you know, straight through.
Yeah, and so his next movie, Memento, it makes sense because the movie plays out backwards, so you're kind of in the mindset of the main character, and you don't know
Yeah, and there's a reason for it.
Exactly, there's a reason for it. With this, it does feel kind of like he was trying, like he wrote the story and was like, oh, but how can I really spice it up? And then kind of decided to arbitrarily, like, oh, what if it happens all out of sequence and you don't really know what's happening? Like,
it worked.
It works. Like, it keeps you compelled. Like, you're kind of like, why does he have a black eye in the scene? What do you think? So you were saying you think the movie might have worked just playing out straightforward. I'm not so sure. I wonder if it would have worked as well playing out straightforward, because I feel like a lot of what compels you with this movie is the fact that you are trying to figure out what's going on and why did this happen? Why is his hair short? Why is it long? And things like that.
Oh, sure. I think it definitely adds to it.
Yeah.
But I think what it comes down to is like if you have a good story, you know, you don't always like need that extra step. True. I think it definitely adds to it. Yeah, because then it forces you to pay attention to every single a scene, because you're wondering when is this? Is this before he got beaten up? Is this after?
And then even when you're done watching the movie, you are still for 10 minutes just like, why, what was the point? Yeah. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying. It's a really good idea. I mean, like, I think at the core of it, it does work because it's a compelling idea. It's a weird, like, Nolan has, as he's grown more and more popular as a filmmaker, his films have become not conventional, but there are clear lines drawn with like, oh, here's the hero, here's the villain. And sometimes the line gets blurred, but his early films, this one, Memento, Insomnia, are very like gray areas where it's like there isn't really a good guy, things don't always work out for the, you know, the main character, you know, not all is as it seems. Like, do you feel like Nolan should go back to that style of filmmaking that's like seen in this movie or Memento, like things that are a little bit grittier, a little less clean cut?
I don't know. Again, like, as long as the story's good, as long as the story's good and the characters are interesting, then I don't really care what he does.
He do whatever he wants. At this point in his career, you really can. That's
important to me.
I think Inception was like reasonably gray, certainly compared to Batman, right? All the characters are thieves, right? Like they want things, but they're not exactly morally good things. They're just kind of the things they want. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that he's making movies like that, or he did. I think he does well with them.
Yeah.
I want there to be movies like that. I think he can make whatever ones he want. Apparently, Dunkirk is really good, so I'm sure he's doing fine without it. You know,
he's doing all right.
Yeah.
He's still making millions and millions of dollars.
Right, so right, okay. Right.
So at what point... So the movie starts off, and it's kind of... I think it... How does it... It's him talking to the cop. Or we don't know who the cop is or anything like that.
Right.
We get a few different images and things like him spitting out the glove and things like that, where it's like, what is going on? How long did it take you to catch up and figure out, like, okay, I kind of see what's happening? A lot of Nolan's movies, you don't really figure it out until the end. But was there a point where you started to kind of go along with it? Like, at what point did you start to feel like you understood somewhat what was happening?
The haircut moment for reasons previously discussed.
So halfway through the movie.
Yeah. Well, like, so I was connecting. I was like, they keep talking about these burglaries that seem like the burglaries we're about to see or have seen.
Right.
What's the connection? They all know each other? Is there a burglary club? Oh, no. They're the same person. That makes sense.
That's fantastic.
Burglary club.
Yeah.
But, I totally forgot that at the end, like, pretty much everyone gets screwed over by Cobb. I forgot that... the girl gets killed. I forgot that they were in on it, quote unquote, together. Did you see that coming at all?
No. The first conversation definitely caught me off guard. And also, I was like, okay, they're in cahoots on something. But even then, like, I don't really understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Even after the movie, I only mostly understand.
No, I put it together when Bill calls Cobb and his shirt is open. I was like, there's someone else
that's
in this room.
It. There he is.
Here's the reveal.
That's right. I was I think the brilliance of Nolan's direction in that scene is that he's like, here's a man with his shirt off, and I'm immediately drawn to that. And I'm like,
distracted.
I'm distracted. I'm like, that man is relatively attractive and looks good with his shirt off. So I think that's brilliant filmmaking on Nolan's part, is distracting me with shirtless men. Well, meanwhile, like, you were smart. You paid attention. You were like, I see what's going
on
here,
Mr.
Nolan.
You only ever see him in a, you know, like, put together suit. Now you see him with like an unbuttoned shirt. Right. You know, it's different.
And you're thinking like, God, like, he is attractive. Or, I mean, you're thinking, oh, no, he's having an affair. Yeah, that's what I meant.
I just mean, oh, there's going to be someone else in this room.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. And he's it must be the only right, woman in this movie. So as far as favorite moments go, is there like a moment that is particularly striking for you in this movie that was like, man, that was really cool? Or like a moment that kind of like, were you watching it and then you kind of were won over by a particular scene? Or...
I mostly liked the last scene of the movie. You know, you kind of know that it's coming, but the specific way that the cops are just kind of like, yeah, this is all totally getting pinned on you. all of this points to you. You've just been led along the entire time. It's always nice to see that actually played out convincingly.
Right.
Again, I could do without maybe the extra sort of plot twists, but at least that portion of it was nice.
Well, again, it started to get very convenient where it's like, this guy planned this out really, really well. Like, he's like, here's the earring and here's the photos and here's all the stuff.
Kind of like Sherlock Holmes method of deduction.
And I know.
That was the first scene where they were in the house with Cobb. He's like, that he's just cribbing Sherlock. That's all that's going on. It's like, oh, these people are mid-20s. They have this album collection. Everyone has a box. Blah blah blah.
Do you think the cop should have maybe been like, this is a little convenient. You came here to confess, like, or to tell me about a murder, but you have every single clue we've been looking for. Maybe that cop needs to retire. They need to get somebody else, get some fresh blood in the force. Somebody who can look at that and say, huh, you know what? You're right. This is a little convenient that you happen to have every single item that we need.
An orgy of evidence.
Exactly. Right. It's a little too convenient.
Yeah, he really is just spelling out like all the things, how this guy was set up. He's like, yep, yeah, you're right. And we found these things and he put them there. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. That kind of suggests that, like, if you ever commit a murder, you just like show up at the police station with all of the evidence, make up a ridiculous story of another way it could have got there, and then you're off the hook.
Yeah, exactly.
Why else would you have come here?
Well, and that's why I think that Cobb might have definitely talked to them before, because that would be the only reason that they now they have two stories, and that would be that gives them doubt. Like,
maybe the cop is Cobb. Cobb.
Maybe he's the old man. That he's
maybe been he. I mean,
he got a haircut.
He got a haircut, and I mean, the people look in this movie. When you get a haircut, you look completely different.
He did. He looks completely different.
Man, I'm trying to think of a favorite moment. I really love when Cobb and Bill are in the apartment and the woman walks in and it's just like, oh hey, how are you doing? All right, we'll get out of here. And just the fact that it's like. That probably would work if like you walked into a house and somebody like a robber was there, but they handled it so like, oh, we're sorry. Or it's like, what?
I think it would work in England. I don't know if it would work over here.
That must be a European thing.
Yeah. Over here is like, I wonder if this person has a gun. Probably.
For some reason, it's so absurd that they get away with it. But then at the next scene, he's like, oh no, there's no way they believed me. But he just the fact that he handles it so smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always really liked.
I did like the moment when I noticed that Bill started emulating Cobb. Because, I did catch it, like, he was the same person when it cut to, like, him with short hair in a suit. But I didn't get, like, the significance of, like, now he's in a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't see that contrast until when it came back to him, like, working more closely with Cobb. And I was like, oh, he kind of turns into, he's trying to, like, turn into Cobb, like, literally. And I thought that was a neat moment.
That's basically what happened. You know, it's a weird character arc for Bill because it's like, what is it? I'm trying to figure out thematically what the idea is. It's like, you know, Bill has been following people to learn about them and write about them. And what does it mean that he basically, I mean, in a story sense, he turns himself into Cobb so that Cobb can basically be like, here's the guy who looks like me, who is the one who's doing it. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm trying, like from a thematic sense, there's got to be something like super, like it kind of reminds me, have you seen Vertigo? Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo. I don't want to spoil. Well, it's a 60-70-year-old movie, so I guess spoilers are out of the question. But basically, the main character recreates a woman in the image of another woman that he was in love with.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of that. And Nolan has been compared to Hitchcock a lot, and I wonder if he was kind of thinking of that when he was making this, like, oh yeah, this guy's trying to basically reshape himself in this other guy's image. But I don't know if it fully works as far as like a satisfying character arc. Like, that's maybe I'm looking too much into it, and I'm trying to like connect the dots a little too much.
But to me, his character arc is just kind of like this guy ultimately is a loser, right? Like, he kind of starts out that way, and
he ends that way.
And he ends that way, yeah. And ultimately he was that way the whole time. Like, he was a patsy, and so like his character is just like, this is the guy who gets shit on. Mm-hmm. We saw him during his like brief moment when he thought his life was something else, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
So it's not really an arc so much as a very small donut.
So basically, the lessons we can learn from this movie are, one, you know, don't be British. That's the number one lesson I've learned from this movie. Two, do your own haircuts, because apparently it turns out really well.
I do my own haircuts.
I mean, and you look beautiful.
Thank you.
You look beautiful. Yeah. And I think, but I mean, this movie proves that, I mean, a self-done haircut is like, it works wonders.
Like with scissors
Is there even a mirror? No,
I don't think it's like, how did he get the back? Like, it's like, it was perfectly like just the way
he cut a little bit of hair off. Then he thought better of it, went to the barber, and like, you just didn't see that part.
Yeah. I was wondering that. Yeah, that made more sense.
Again, Nolan is brilliant in that he withholds certain scenes and he leaves it up to your interpretation. Yeah. There's a whole sequel here with the barber where it's just like, you know, there's something going on there, and mm-hmm. the barber is starting to suspect, and maybe he decides to dress like mm-hmm. Bill, who's dressing as Cobb. And then again, you've got the dream within the dream within the dream, and it's blowing people's minds right now.
Mm. Also, apparently, smashing someone's fingers with a hammer does not leave any blood.
only heads have blood.
Yeah, and only head wounds.
And the blood will not seep through the first layer of rug.
Right.
Roll that up and you're good.
You're good. You're all set. It's a very, thick rug. It's exclusive to Britain, I believe.
I think it's exclusive to people who date mob bosses, right? Like, all your rugs just necessarily have like a coat of like cling wrap underneath the bottom.
Yeah,
exactly. You just lay them out everywhere, just in case we have to murder.
You never know when your boyfriend's gonna come visit.
I think one of the times I was most confused was at the very, very beginning of the movie, because I got it's so meta.
Yeah,
because the guy's you know, narrating, and I thought for a second that the cameraman was who was narrating.
Oh, because he was following.
Because he was following a guy, and I didn't realize that was our main character.
It was kind of like,
and I was like,
his perspective
we're
for a little bit. Yeah,
it's like, this guy's talking about following people,
but we
know there's a cameraman following him around.
We are in his perspective right now.
Every movie audience is what he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I am for. Yeah. It's really interesting how it kind of plays out, because in the beginning it's almost like the first half is an entirely different film from the second half, which is super weird, because again, the movie is completely out of whack the entire time. I don't know.
I like that it comes full circle.
Really, I think I enjoy this movie. I like it. I'm more impressed with it because of like the history of it and knowing it's Nolan's first film. And I'm really impressed with it in general. Honestly, if someone had put this on and was just like, oh yeah, here's a movie, I would have been like, oh, that was really good. Yeah. And then if they'd been like, oh, you know, it's Christopher Nolan's first movie, I would have been like, really? That's so cool. And then I would have been like, of course, Batman. And it would have all made sense to me. So, all right. On a scale of 1 to 5 perfect haircuts, with 5 being the best, how many perfect haircuts would you give this movie, Mark?
3.5 to 4, I would say. Like, it's definitely a good movie. It's worth watching. It's not going to be your favorite movie, probably, but like you said, it's damned impressive for a first effort $6,000 budget.
Yeah.
It's got all those Christopher Nolan things that make it really interesting and cerebral and everything. So it's worth the 70 minutes for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paige? I think it's a solid, cut from great clips. You know, it's like in your budget, but at the end of the day, it's a good haircut.
That's right. It's a damn good haircut.
It's a damn good haircut.
I'll agree with that. I'll do 3.5. I'll give it that.
Yeah, I can do 3. Yeah.
Yeah. 3.5.
If I have to 3.5
wonderful haircuts. I really enjoy it. Again, I think it's the movie I enjoy mostly because I know it was done by Nolan. Right. I think if I happened upon it, I would be like, oh yeah, that was good. But just in the context of his filmography, it's like very, it's really cool to see how confident and how sure of his style he was, even this early on. He came out the gate with a lot of the stuff we continue to see from him, even all the way to Dunkirk. So yeah, it's cool. And if you're a fan of Nolan, you should absolutely check it out.
Yeah.
So yeah, do that. And that's pretty much it. I mean, unless you guys have anything more to say about the haircut or the glove or anything, that's our show.
I think so. No, I think
that's our show.
That's it.
That's our show.
That's our show within a show. And we're very happy you listened to us. Be sure, if you're listening to us on iTunes or anywhere where you can rate us, give us a 5-star rating. Even if you don't want to give us a 5-star rating, just do it, because you'll feel really, really good about it. And I'll love you forever. And if that's not enough incentive, I really don't know what would be. But if you want to talk with me about Christopher Nolan, as I'm sure you do, just find me on Twitter at YeShondorman. Is there anywhere you two want to be found on Twitter or otherwise, or do you want to say hidden?
You can find me on Twitter at I'm Paige Hamilton.
Oh, very easy to remember. Mm-hmm. What about you, Mark?
Nope.
There it is.
I'm nowhere.
Nowhere. He's nowhere to be found. Nope. He's trapped within the dream, and we will have to dig him out someday. But thank you so much for listening. Again, follow at Join Nerd Party and check out all the other great shows on thenerdparty.com. They're all wonderful. Join us for all our wonderful Christopher Nolan nonsense and conversations. There's so much Christopher Nolan stuff out there. You can listen to Nerd Nuptial. They reviewed Dunkirk Filibuster. I was just on there with Matt Hansen, and we talk about Dunkirk and go crazy into Nolan movies. I complain about The Dark Knight Rises. Oh, damn it. I promised myself I wasn't going to do that in this episode, but saved it for the filibuster, so go check it out. And we hope you are followed, but in the best way possible. I don't really know what that means, but I was trying to tie it.
This.
Yeah, just full follow us on Twitter.
There it is.
I should have just left it at that.
We need your following
on social media.